table of the evaluation, and they will probably be, they will prefer to enlighten us yet again. So, we will invite both of you
As far as industry is concerned, it's concerned we use it in a number of areas. As far as our industrial processes, clearly if there was any intention to ban that approach, it would cause us to have to reconsider a variety of chemical processes, mineral processing processes, even the use of biomass in the industry, particularly in the both paper and sugar industry. The sugar industry is almost completely self-sufficient in electricity supply to the burning of the gas. We use its thermal treatment processes to reduce pollution, to reduce emissions in a number of processes. That is a ban on incineration would seriously compromise that possibility. We are currently engaged with the government on a number of discussions as to how we can improve and increase power generation possibilities to alleviate the current electricity shortage. Many of these processes are thermal treatment of what, in terms of the way the bill is written, would be defined as well. So, should incineration be banned, we would not be able to do any of those opportunities. However, in saying that, we understand the concern that there is around thermal treatment, particularly of hazards. And as far as we're concerned, there are a number of others that control particularly the emissions from such processes. And we believe that those laws should deal with the concerns around, for example, emission of hazards. We think that it's important that when we look at concerns around pollution, we don't only look at this bill, but we look at the whole suite of environmental laws that are available for us to deal with that. And we'd be concerned that we try to use the way to deal with problems that have capacity to deal with under the Equality Act, for example. We think that the point has been made to understand that it's important to understand the cost-benefit of alternative technology. That before a country adopts wider use of a particular technology, particularly the use of technology by the state, for example, in the way of management, that it's important to understand the cost benefits of that, even if you use that. Because it's important to, as we have seen, for example, with the electricity shortage, we perhaps didn't pay enough attention to that matter. We didn't look at what the price of electricity should have been. We didn't look at how we should have saved electricity more than we have up to now, but we now find ourselves in front. We don't want to do the same thing. So we think it's important that the bill does not preclude any possibility, that it allows all possibilities, all technology possibilities, but that depending on the technology and the risk of that technology, it is less or more stringently regulated. We understand that and agree with that in principle. We have no difficulty with that. We recognize that in some parts of projects, for example, in any project, when you start a company, you shut it down and what you do, you can have a higher risk of emissions, for example. We, under no circumstance, are saying that it would be important for us to be exempt from a stringent requirement under those circumstances. So we're not looking for leniency under those particular circumstances. It's a challenge for us, it's hard for us to manage, but we can do manage. We're not asking for leniency. We agree that for any sort of risk, it's a risk for the world. So, Chair, sometimes the point I understand was made that it's very difficult for us to control emissions when we either start up the process or when we shut it down. That is correct. That the challenge under those circumstances is significantly higher than under normal operations. However, we are not saying that we should be exempt from compliance under those circumstances. It's much harder for us to comply. That is correct. But we are not saying that we should not be forced to comply under those circumstances. We are saying that there is a limit that we must comply with, we must comply. must have and say, oh, well, it's too difficult to handle these kids. Because that's just not the way to do it. We then don't see the environmental change. The other difficulty here is that, and it's a difficult legislation challenge, it is nearly true to say that one size fits all when one is looking for legislation. So that when one speaks broadly about consideration, it's not possible to have a single legislation that deals with all aspects of consideration and consideration of all types of materials. And we need to start to make sure that the regulation is proportional and relevant to the particular aspect. And we think that it may, and surely I would cite this advantage because we're working on second-hand information from people that we're friends. And also looking at the presentations that were made, it appears that there may be some approach which is more disposed than it needs to be in some aspects. For example, the burning of carbon atoms, you see that it's a much less risky operation than, for example, the burning of carbon atoms. You understand that the burning of carbon atoms needs to be protected through such as the sun and have no difficulty with that. But that's not the reason in our view today. We think that it may be important, if one sees the kind of debate, that it may be important for us to. As the regulations unfold in terms of the act, once the act has finally been promulgated, we think that there may be a case be made for a more robust approach. That we can, as industry, explain our position more fully to those that oppose these processes, and that there is a proper engagement that it can come to a more common understanding and approach as the regulation then. Because it's not worthwhile for us to have the same obligation for every application that we make. The expenses cost a lot of money, it's delayed, and we just think that it's better to have a clear regulation so that everyone understands that we can't always be think that such a process would be important, particularly in an area where there are such divergent views. And as in the we are investigating. So whatever project you may think would be appropriate, we can be standing to engage. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Hello, everybody. Would you want us to think the higher condition? That will be for us. Everything is coming. So my words to you that proper.
Ms. Anutembi, my colleague will present on behalf of the Association of Cement Producers and I will on a technical basis where appropriate. Thank you.
Honourable Chair. Honourable Chair, the member, thank you for the opportunity for allowing us to speak. On this issue. I'm going to make a short presentation that reiterates the position of the industry in terms of cement kiln co-processing. We are, as South Africans, going through economic growth, and this economic growth creates and poses many challenges that need to be addressed. And these challenges include energy efficiency challenges, waste management challenges, and air quality challenges. When we look at the energy challenges, we see that most of the resources that are used, which is the coal as an energy source, is under extreme pressure. The problems that we have faced as a country in terms of electricity demand and supply constraints has been felt by the industry as well, because inherent within the problem is the supply of the coal, which looks at the quantity as well as the quality of the coal. The industry risks becoming non-competitive on an international basis due to excessive costs in terms of the inputs. Therefore, the solution would be to utilize better the available energy resources, and these would include waste streams. How do we face the challenges that I've just spoken about? There is a hierarchy, which is called waste management hierarchy, which you can use in order to face these challenges. The hierarchy states that it's appropriate and prudent to prevent waste generation. If you can't do that, then you reuse and recycle. Therefore, thereafter, you can then do recovery of the material. And as a last resort, you then use disposal methods, which will include incineration, landfilling, and chemical treatment. This same hierarchy was adopted by the EU on the 13th of February of 2007, which means that they understood that recovery should actually include co-processing in cement kiln as one of the waste management options. What is co-processing? If we look at co-processing, we can actually Africanize it in terms of the South African brand. We as South Africans, we solve our problems with existing resources, and we solve many problems with one solution. Co-processing is actually an internationally accepted best practice, which is utilized in many countries, including the USA, the EU, and many other countries. And it's also been endorsed by the Worldwide Fund. Technically, co-processing is a simple process. If you look at the cement kiln process, where you actually make clinker, which will then be utilized to make cement, you have to use lots of energy in order to make the clinker, and that energy is derived from burning coal. The coal is a non-renewable natural resource, so if we replace the non-renewable resource, the coal in this instance, with waste streams that have got energy values, that is all the materials with organics, then we'll be able to reduce the usage of the coal, and at the same time we'll be creating an option that could be utilized as a waste management toolkit. If we look at the air quality challenges, in terms of co-processing in a cement plant, it's potentially not an issue because emissions are really controllable. The emissions from co-processing of waste are essentially the same as when using conventional fuels or when using waste streams. The extensive tests have been undertaken by the EPA, the European Union, as well as endorsement from the Stockholm Convention, that they have shown the results, that prove the results that whether you're utilizing co-processing waste streams in replacement of coal in the burning process, emissions are not significantly affected, especially the dioxins and furans, which are a controversial issue. They are not affected. Also, if we look at the air emissions, we know that the greenhouse gases actually affect climate change. So if you have streams or if you have industries that are operating within the economy, you've got the cement industry that's operating, you've got other waste management streams that are operating, handling the waste. If you actually combine those, you can actually reduce the amount of greenhouse gases, the combined greenhouse gases that are emitted due to the waste handling processes. That way you actually reduce the effect on the climate change in the process as well. And when you start doing that, you also open the door to an opportunity of actually applying for carbon credit under the CDM project. We as the industry are aware that to be able to do that, we need to earn the trust. We acknowledge that we have to earn the trust. We do not expect to be given the trust. We have to earn the trust. We acknowledge the concerns of all the stakeholders, the communities, the NGOs, and the public representatives. And we acknowledge that possibly communication, there have been communication gaps in the past that could have resulted in the current scenario. Cement kiln co-processing, we understand, is a controversial process, but it is accepted internationally as a best practice. From the ACMP's point of view, we will implement international best practice to generate the confidence and build the trust. That way, we will be earning the trust. So we'll demonstrate good practice so that we can earn the trust from all the stakeholders. When we do that, there should be co-benefits that come out of the process, which can be seen by the different stakeholders. And these include large amounts of waste being diverted from landfills, natural resource usage being reduced, climate change impacts will be reduced due to the reduction in the combined greenhouse gases emissions. There will be jobs that will be created, and empowerment will be enhanced. It's actually a national solution, seeing that we've got installed in South Africa kilns throughout all the provinces except the Free State province. Our undertaking as the ACMP on co-processing is we will ensure occupational health and safety. We will keep our environment safe. We will not accept listed banned waste in our processes. We will guarantee the quality of our products. We will offer waste management solutions to our partners. We will comply with all relevant legislation, and we will promote best practices. And we will communicate transparently. Thus, if we revisit the hierarchy of the waste management challenges, we can see that when you start with the prevention at the top of the apex, followed by the reusing of the waste material and the recycling, co-processing then follows logically with its core benefits. And then lastly, the alternative being the disposal of the material. In conclusion, Mr. Chair, indeed co-processing is a sustainable solution that is an important part of the waste management toolkit in South Africa. The ACMP would also be honored to host the committee at the cement operation as requested in the previous meeting. We would be glad to take your questions and listen to your comments. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Tembe. I can see Honorable Mkwena, Honorable Mokem, Honorable Korai, in that order. Okay, the mic is noisy.
Yes. Yes, Chairperson, you were wise to say I should wait for the second presentation, because what I was going to ask concerning the first presentation also advances itself in the second presentation. Having said that, I'm impressed by the fact that Business Unity South Africa is an overall organization, and it's going to come to present to us as well as business specific from the cement industry in response to the impending legislation that you are going to make. So we appreciate that Triple P, you know, public partnership to empower us. It's legislators that keep having formulate or craft legislation from an informed position. But what is worrying me is that your presentation, much as it is advocative, is too general. It's not specific. You're not saying clause so and so, crafted the way it is, will jeopardize our business interest. Because we are not here as parliamentarians to jeopardize the industry. We are here to ensure that there is sustainable development. Because we only have one planet and one environment. And if we mess it up, there is God, not good. You can't ask God to create another environment and another planet. It's God. So that now, you must then say, be specific. Like other people in the past who came here to make presentations, say that currently, if close to and so is crafted this way, these are going to become the consequential jeopardy to our business in terms of incineration, et cetera, et cetera. But what you are coming across as assuring us, no, we'll be well behaved, and generally, et cetera, et cetera, trust us, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, you see, but I mean, you know, we've got a broad trust mandate from the people when they voted us into the parliament as well. But then we must ensure that we vote the whole law specifically. Because here is a particular law, and you know, it has got to be, we must help us to focus on specific clauses instead of asking for a blanket overall assurance permission. Because you see, the will. When you leave, we'll remain and say, yeah, they spoke very, very well. But precisely, what is their gripe? So we need to know the particular gripe. Plus also, synthetically, the way it's formulated, or this wording, the way it is, will create ambiguity, or it will paralyze industry. So that's what I was pleading for Chairperson, that they must be specific synthetically, or also in terms of specific weights. Then we can have a more focused debate.
We can prefer precision, Honorable Morgan. Honorable Morgan?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. A couple of questions. Could you run us through the level of in-house expertise that cement plants have with regards to the measuring of air quality? I would like to know specifically whether you measure for dioxins yourself. It's all fine relying on regulators to be the policeman, but presumably you also measure yourself. From your point of view, how much interaction is there with the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism? Could it be more? Do you seek engagements with them? Do they seek it out with you? Do you have a forum where you are able to actually discuss issues of air quality with them on a regular basis? Secondly, we had, it would be a myth not to bring this up, we had public hearings last year where we had representatives of a number of communities who came to this committee. If I remember correctly, there was a particular representative who represented a community near Port Shepstone who lived in the vicinity of a cement factory who spoke, amongst other things, about health problems that, in their view, could be attributable to the nearby cement plant. What level of engagement do you have with surrounding communities? Do you have a best practice guide that forces your member companies to actually engage with surrounding communities about these issues? And to what extent do you actually measure the health effects of cement manufacturing beyond the boundaries of your own, beyond the boundaries of the cement factory? Last question, you painted a particular picture about the need for cement, victims of our own success. We hear that a lot nowadays. So, from your point of view, increased investment in kiln co-processing is almost a necessity. Could you give us indication of, in terms of the scale of technology in the world available for co-processing, where South African coal processing technology ranks? Is it amongst the best in the world, average or bad? And are you committing wherever your component companies invest in kiln processing plants, that you will go for the best available technology and not cut costs on more inferior technology? Thank you.
In your presentation, you talk of the fact that there's no ash from co-press processing of waste in cement kilns, and all the ash from the waste material is incorporated into the clinker. Just on a point of clarity, where does the dust come from? That seems to be quite a major issue with surrounding communities. And also in the Port Shepstone area where the Honourable Morgan mentioned, farmers there say their crops are covered with dust from the cement kilns, and if there's a co-processing process that goes on with waste coming in, they won't actually know what's in that dust. And I would like some clarity. If there's no ash, what is the dust and where does it come from? And certainly the issue, again, that Morgan raised around emissions and the health hazards. I would just like some clarity on your interaction with the department and maybe later from the department on what their view is on the dust. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Basically, I'm covered by Honorable Mgwena on his concern. But what I see from what you have described on the coal processing, number one, I see an opportunity for job creation, because when you go through your waste stream, the separation aspect of it would require people, and I believe it's labor intensive, which is a good thing. And I also see the second thing, whereby that kind of process sort of has a positive effect towards climate change, you know. So that's basically the comment that I wanted to say. No question.
Okay. I would like to ask these questions so that we can hopefully get them. Are there any alternatives to incineration? Okay. Secondly, are there any dangers to co-processing? Linked to the first question, are there materials that can only be dealt with through incineration? Are there such materials? And they will have no option except in the middle. Could we...
Honourable Member and Members, thank you very much for the question. With regard to Honourable Chairman's questions with regard to alternatives to incineration, it is a very difficult question to answer whether there are any materials where there is no other alternative but incineration. Because as technology improves, and technologies change and recycling initiatives improve, there will always be alternatives. It is a very, very difficult question to answer. I would see it more in a pragmatic way to say, is there an alternative for all the material that is generated? Normally, with incineration and also with co-processing, because there are recycling and reuse are higher on the waste management hierarchy, they are preferred technologies, but they are normally not the solution for all the material or all the volume. I can take an example, very simple example for tires. Tires in South Africa and around the world, there are approximately solutions for 15% of all the tires that are generated. So what happens with the other 85%? And since we want to move away from landfilling tires, which we all agree is a waste of energy potential, something has to be done with these 85% that are now left, that we can't do anything with. And these 85% the cement industry proposes to use as a fuel in a co-processing activity. So, I hope that answers your question with regards to the alternatives available. I think it is less a question of an absolute technology than the ability to use the materials that cannot be recycled. If I can answer Honourable Thomas with regards to the ash and the fact where the dust comes from, if I can refer you back to the diagram in your pack on the cement kiln. Unfortunately, this becomes a bit technical and is difficult to explain without a projector. The picture of the cement kiln you see, on your left-hand side, you see the tall structure, which is the preheater. In the preheater of the cement kiln, the raw materials, which are alkaline in nature, are dried and heated and then calcined in the pre-calciner to form calcium oxide. The dust that cement kiln emits is generated after this kiln section and is mostly lime and limestone and some raw material. Most of the combustion products from the kiln are absorbed into the kiln because of the high alkalinity of the process. I'm sorry, I didn't get your question.
What percentage would you say actually leaves the kiln and goes into the surrounding atmosphere and community or wherever? When you say most of it, that's very vague.
I understand that that's vague. Percentage, it's a bit unclear percentage of what. If I talk about the organic portion of the waste, all of the organic portion of the waste is destroyed completely in the kiln. Because we operate in an oxidizing environment, it's all the waste is destroyed. We're also running at extremely high temperatures and long residence time, a very turbulent atmosphere. If you are concerned about the percentage of the dust in the process, that leaves the stack, modern cement kilns, you will not see any dust come out of the stack. Because we use modern cement kilns use bag filters, most modern technology uses bag filters, and the emissions from bag filters are lower than 50 milligrams, which you cannot see. There are cement kilns in South Africa that still use electrostatic precipitators, and that are still permitted to use electrostatic precipitators. The emissions from those are higher, but in all cases are in excess of 99.5%. So less than 0.5% of the dust in the process would leave the stack if the electrostatic precipitator were working properly. Again, I must reiterate that the dust emissions leaving the stack are normally just the raw material that we use to make the cement. So it is on the other side, on the raw material feed side of the process, not on the side of the process where the co-processing takes place. The preheater you see is an effective barrier to the emissions of combustion gases, except, of course, NOx, CO2, and some very small amounts of the associates that come out normally. So the point we want to make is that the emissions from a cement kiln do not materially change when we co-process waste from normal cement kiln operations. I hope it answers that question. Then there were a lot of questions on our interactions with the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism. In response to our EIA applications for the co-processing of waste and cement kilns, and all cement companies in South Africa did submit those applications, the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism did launch a national policy development process on the high temperature treatment of waste and the use of alternative fuels in cement kilns. So the interactions with the department has been intensive and has been very positive. And we are very happy with the interaction from the department, if that answers your question. I believe I didn't answer the question with regards to no ash that is produced. Because the cement kiln uses the ash from the coal as a raw material, if you look at the process, the coal we burn, the ash ends up in the kiln and gets back integrated into the clinker. Exactly the same happens to the ash from the waste. Honourable Mukwena, the fact that you say the presentation is too general, the point we would like to make is that is very similar to that of Busa. If you ban incineration, and at the moment that would ban co-processing, although we feel those are two separate issues, it would cause tremendous problems for industry. A lot of waste streams would have now suddenly have to go to landfill where previously they were incinerated. We have a tremendous landfill problem in South Africa. Our hazardous waste landfills are getting full very quickly, and we need to find alternatives now. With the level, Honourable Morgan, you had a question on our level of in-house expertise, firstly. We've been making cement for a very, very long time, as you probably know. And of the cement companies operating in South Africa, four major cement companies are international companies with extensive multi-year experience in the use and co-processing of waste and cement. So all that we are proposing is to apply that international learning and best practice to us. So this is not new technology that we are groundbreaking stuff we're doing. This is international standard practice that we are applying to South Africa. With regards to measurement of air quality, our permits only at the moment regulate our dust emissions. There are no other emission regulations for most of the cement kilns except in the Northwest province, where there's been some more stringent regulations. The ACMP has made a commitment that all cement kilns that will co-process waste will have online emission monitors, which means we will measure online the emissions of most of the elements of concern, or most of the elements that are regulated by the European Union, and also, consequently, what DEET has decided to adopt as emission proposals for co-processing. So, that is in place. With regards to the measurement of dioxins, nobody in the world measures their own dioxins. It is always done by an independent outside laboratory, because it's a very complicated measurement process. There's also been a lot of concern about South Africa's capacity to actually analyze dioxin measurements. The reason why South Africa does not have that capacity is because the demand does not exist. If co-processing were regulated, well regulated and allowed, together with incineration, this would now become possible and the capacity would be created in the country. So we would then create the in-house expertise. You asked about a best practice guide for engaging communities. We did acknowledge that there has been a communication gap with our stakeholders. And that is one of the major drives that the cement industry is now working on to improve the communication with our communities so that they understand better what we're doing and they feel more comfortable with not only co-processing but the cement in general. Measurement of health effects beyond our borders. I cannot speak for all the members. I know that some of the members do measure dust, collect dust beyond their borders and analyze it regularly. That is something that would have to be taken up with members themselves. And then the scale of technology available for co-processing. Members, I must remind you that the cement kilns that are being built right now in South Africa are the best available technology worldwide. Because we are very resource intensive. We use a lot of energy. And the most modern technology uses the least energy, which means we'll implement. So the kilns being built right now are the best available technology. The kilns that are in existence in the country, there are some older kilns. There are some long dry kilns. There are full-fledged preheater kilns, which is considered older technology. That does not mean they are less suited to the co-processing of waste. What it does mean, however, is that the amounts of materials or the volumes or the substitution rates perhaps could not be the same. But the basic process remains the same. The basic barriers to emission remain the same. So with regards to best available technology, yes, we do have it in South Africa. And the cement industry, together with the department, is determining the best available technology applicable to South Africa and will implement it. I believe that those are all the questions. Are there any further?
Yeah. I'm gratified to hear that South Africa has the best technology in the world. And the opposite of in every dark cloud of the silver lining would be that if we have the best technology in the world, the question is, how have we managed to acquire such expertise? Number two, which is a challenge, I've heard that precisely because of our capacity to incinerate, all other countries in the world are using South Africa as a dumping ground. They're bringing the rubbish here to come and incinerate it here so that now we can then have a problem of pollution.
Chairperson, it is not decent to say to an adult whenever he tells or she tells you something, you say you don't believe it's true. At times you can be interpreted as somebody who is being rude. What I'm saying, I don't think if one can get to those communities residing next to these industries, factories, really and truly, they can just say, all is well, they are happy. I don't believe. Because now, the presenters, they put it so nicely and, for one, to believe whatever they are saying. But my argument is that if you can get to those communities, there will be something. There will be set stories told. And coming to this, the best technology, it's my first time to hear, more especially when it affects, pollution and the rest. Well, if that is true, that can be one of, something that can give one hope in life. Maybe it can be one at a certain stage. It's good just for the presenters from the industry just to say something not covering whatever. I'm not happy. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Terence, to be more direct, have you heard any complaints from any immediate communities within your facilities complaining about dust? And if so, what have you done about it? If not, why not? Thank you.
Maybe to restate what the members are raising. I mean, one gets the impression, Mr. Ottoman, that there is no problem. Who are overstating the problem, or the NGOs whoever are overstating the problem, that incineration is not posing any threat. Maybe the primitive ones, but the modern ones are fine. Is that what you're telling us? And therefore, the communities that came to talk to us, see, they completely have no case. I think if you could comment on that. And then, you say some of the primitive facilities could be a problem. What percentage of your kiln are still primitive? Now, because you think that the people who came to talk to us were not fabricating their concerns, we have tried to tighten our regulation and our approach to incineration. For instance, we want Inderkey to really look at all the other possible ways of managing waste other than incineration. And that if incineration is to be used, let it be the last resort. What do you say about this view from our side?
Honourable Chair, if I may answer your question first, and I'll start from the back. As I said previously, we do not support the stance that all other technologies should first be investigated and discarded before co-processing is evaluated and then incineration. We see it more as a pragmatic approach where materials that cannot be recycled then must evaluate, can they be co-processed? And if they cannot be successfully co-processed, then they must be disposed of. No, because if you make it as a last resort, then one would have to go through the chain, that logic every single time, which would make it extremely onerous and very difficult. So, no, we do not agree with it. Because the argument is much wider and much more difficult, as Mrs. Lotter said correctly, it is a very difficult argument to sweep under one table and to sweep under one rug to say that it must be an option of last resort. We support Ms. Lotter's view that it should be done in regulation, much more specific and much more rigorous. We believe there is a specific place for cement kiln co-processing in the waste management options available to South Africa, and there is a specific place for incineration in the waste management options available to South Africa. Our modern cement kilns and our cement kilns suitable to the co-processing of waste? Absolutely. I work in the US for a number of years doing exactly that. And my personal feeling, yes, it is safe, if done properly. Do communities have concerns? Yes, communities do have concerns. We acknowledge that. Have there been complaints? Yes, there have been complaints. Has the cement industry in each and every single case done something about it? It's very difficult to comment on that, but probably not. What we are committing to is open and transparent communication about what we intend to do. Cement kiln co-processing can only be successful with open, transparent communication with all stakeholders. Honorable Diti, you spoke about older facilities that have lower emission performance than the most modern facilities. We believe that they do not pose a significant additional risk because the dust emission, essentially, the chemical consistency of the dust does not change significantly. Yes, so if a cement kiln at the moment would emit a certain amount of dust, that emission would not change significantly. So what we're saying is co-processing of waste does not change what we do in a material manner. It essentially remains the same. We do, however, support the fact that the emission performance of any industry should improve over time. And we are busy doing that in our renewal processes, in our investment processes. All of our member companies invest significant amounts of money every single year to improve our emissions. So that is a natural process, and it will be accelerated by the co-processing of waste. Honorable Kwena spoke about bringing rubbish here for incineration. I believe the Basel Convention prohibits that. So that would not be possible. Well, it would be possible, I guess, but it's not the Basel Convention, which we are a signatory of, prohibits that. So that covers that question, I believe. As I mentioned previously, three of our members are multinational cement companies, two of which are the largest two cement companies in the world. They have been co-processing waste in their cement kilns for upwards of 50 years around the world, so there's an extensive knowledge base in those companies that will be utilized to establish the practice in South Africa. So we will definitely use international best practice, the best people available. I think between our members, they have the best people that know all about it, that is to know about it.
Chair, I'd just like to supplement on a few comments. As far as a specific wording is concerned, we are satisfied with the current draft of the bill as far as incineration is concerned. However, if we could be of assistance in looking at the proposals made by government, we're quite willing to do that. Chair, I think it may be important for members to be aware. We are very aware of the increasing analytical demand that new environmental legislation places on us as a country, and we're currently working with the DPI on a project to try to see what are the needs in that regard. Dioxins and furans are one such pollutant that we believe we need to look at building our own capacity. That project will probably be finished in the next couple of months, where we will then look at how can we work together with government to make sure that the necessary facilities are developed in South Africa. So I think it's maybe just important to know that there is something being done about that problem, because it is a problem for us at the moment. Then, Chair, if one looks at the matter of alternative technology, how does one decide what one is going to do about it? And I'd like to use an example that we have at the moment. One of government's major interventions in the electricity shortage is to prohibit the use of incandescent lamps, the normal bulbs that many of us use in our homes, and to replace them with so-called compact fluorescent lamps. Now, compact fluorescent lamps contain mercury, so they are much more energy efficient, but they have another negative, the fact that they contain mercury. As soon as we have as a country millions, I mean, the government is talking about rolling out 20 million in this year. As soon as one now introduces that product into the market in large scale, there's immediately a disposal concern. How will we dispose of those 20 million lamps? Now one has to look, knowing that they contain mercury, immediately they become a hazardous waste. what are the technologies that we would use to do that? To incinerate a glass bulb is not such a trivial task. So it's not an easy question. So I just use that to illustrate the complexity, but what we would always look at is what is the environmental impact of the different technologies. So if you, for example, look at the handling of medical waste, you can autoclave medical waste. But what does that give you? You've got a process which hardly reduces the volume. You then have, from that treatment process, a large volume which you still have to landfill. Do you want to even landfill an autoclaved body part? These are all questions that you have to ask to decide what technology you would use. Do you, for example, is encapsulation of hazardous waste, is that something that we want to do long term? Because really it's just storage. You're not dealing with waste. So it's another question. In landfills, we rely on a biological process to reduce the volume of the waste. There's many wastes that are not biodegradable, readily biodegradable. Mercury is an example. So we put a compact fluorescent lamp on the landfill. The mercury is not destroyed by that process. What should we then do with that? We also need to look, for example, at the challenges that we face as a country in what we can do and what we can't do. I'm sure members may be aware of the African stockpile program, which seeks to eliminate from the African continent stockpiles of hazardous waste pesticides or obsolete pesticides. Pesticides that are stored all over the continent, and South Africa is one of the countries participating in that. We participated in that project before as well, where obsolete pesticides were collected in the southern African region. We had to export those pesticides to Europe for treatment because we couldn't deal with it ourselves. And as we now are collecting obsolete pesticides again, it's a question, what will we do with them? So there are some waste streams that we in fact export. As far as importation of waste, of hazard, particularly hazardous waste, is concerned, we should recall that the bill in fact prohibits it and will give a much more powerful, provide, frankly, a much more powerful instrument than we currently have in that regard. So waste would not, once the bill is promulgated, unless that clause is changed, and I see no reason that it would be changed, we would have a much stronger instrument to protect ourselves against imports. There's a number of problems with importation of waste here. For example, we may import waste as a raw material where we in fact should rather be manufacturing the raw material and undermines our manufacturing base. So there's a lot of economic issues around the importation of waste as well as environmental issues. But also when one looks at technologies, it's important to understand not only the investment cost and whether we would be able to pay for it. Because if we're talking about waste management, the waste management that the state undertakes, at municipal level, for example, we have to be very clear that we are able to afford it. And we need to do that cost analysis before the time, before we would even consider going to a new technology. And not only do we have to look at the environmental impact, we have to look at the social cost. What is the cost of impairing someone's health to the society? These are all things that have to be considered. That's why we would be very concerned to see a blanket approach. We would want to see that all of these issues are taken into account. And it's difficult, we would say, it's difficult to put those details down in a bill, in an act. But in a regulation, you can be much more specific. You put for each type of waste, you can start to say, what are the issues? So the kind of concerns that members are raising can be built into the requirements for an application of certain types of technology. And we have no difficulty with that. And we would really believe that that is the way to work. And we would have no difficulty in working with the committee in whatever way you would see helpful, in order to look at the more detailed approach to the areas where you do have concerns. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, I think. Mr. Osman differs with you. Because his argument, well, what I'm hearing him saying, is that they wouldn't want to see examination as a last resort, but that they want a somewhat a blanket approach where there are no, we continue as we, because it is to show that there's not much of a problem, that we should continue as we've been continuing. I'm not so sure what that because that's when I asked this question, that was the kind of answer that I got. Because I think the approach that the committee is taking is that we think that there are problems with what we're told that there are problems with incineration, that there are health problems vis-à-vis the adjacent communities. And there are also other options of waste management. Okay? We also agree with you that not everything can be landfilled or the same is landfilled. We agree with that. But we wouldn't want to have a situation where you just land everything even without any consideration. And that therefore there must be, there definitely has to be an exercise. How is done, because someone must internalize that, because it cannot be society. Even the incineration business are in a business, are making money out of incineration. Okay? So if there is any internalization of any cost, unless these costs are too much, maybe we can talk about that, but if those costs are reasonable costs, maybe they may eat out 1% of your profit. But not a disaster, not going to collapse, because then definitely we should be talking about some measures that are far more stringent than the I think the easy way out that Mr. Ottoman seems to be going to. I don't know, maybe the two of you may want to comment on this before we proceed. Honorable Gwen and Machama, that's all this. I've also noted your hand, TDJ.
Yes, I think you've summed up reasonably okay. You see, the committee is not here to frustrate industry and economic development. That's the last thing we want to do. we would like to make laws that are sustainable and which leave less chance of contestation in court. I haven't heard from the presenters a definite commitment of R&D, research and development, to say, right, we foresee, we accept that incineration currently is the last disposal method, but it has got a problem of pollution. Nobody can dispute that. And I think you also ask, I'm not a spokesperson, which is and question. Now, the R&D situation is just what it means. Because you should, as business, be very responsible and say, right, here we've got legislators that are seeing the problem of this challenge of ensuring that everybody has got the right to a healthy, clean environment constitutionally. Now, we find ourselves as business having to resort to incineration. But we know that this incineration has got problems of pollution. Now, we are committing ourselves to do an aggressive R&D, research and development project. So in the fruition of time, we can answer the chairperson's question, what alternatives are there? Because we can't take incineration as a given. Just ban everything and that's it. And then we are showing the people, no, there won't be any pollutants. That's number one. I want to have a commitment of starting an initiative of R&D. Right. Which you can invite the committee to actually come and say, this is what we're trying to do now to find a solution as an alternative to incineration. Of course, without risking throwing yourself out of business, because you never know, that R&D can actually give an edge in business. And you can have the whole world coming to you to buy that technology. Number two, what is your attitude on placing of a moratorium on incineration? In other words, you say, like, 5 to 10 years, let's place a moratorium on new incineration, not the current one. So we don't disturb the economic activity, but you say,
newcomers that are excited, thinking, hey, there's money out there in Silesia, must stop now and not do that. So I must give a chance to the improvement of the synodes. You know, it's two questions. Question number one, R&D, what commitment, specific commitment is there to say, you as business are putting aside a certain amount of money to show you are serious about diluting synodes and not accepting as a panacea. You see, this is what I'm trying to do now, to come up with an alternative to synodes. Number two, linked to that would be that what is your attitude to the legislators imposing a moratorium on new entrants in this generation, so that now we don't find the state being touted that we're dealing with primitive technology of incineration, and this time there are new people that are coming in and fascinated by what is not really primitive, and say, look, they can make quick cash in the meantime, whilst Parliament is still confused.
I hear what you're saying, that the new cement kilns that are being built and that will be built will have the top technology in the world. But the old kilns, of which I imagine the majority of cement kilns in South Africa that are in existence are of older technology, and yet they were pitching with co-processing as soon as it becomes the norm. What can those old kilns be upgraded to the modern technology, or will, once they get going, they'll say, oh well, but I mean, we cannot afford, or we cannot stop the process long enough for them to be upgraded, and what will happen in that situation? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to go back on the question of incineration and co-processing, I think my colleague was trying to make a distinction between the two processes. Although they both utilize high temperature in the process, but they are slightly different in the sense that co-processing actually utilizes the material as an energy source and in the recovery process, whereas in the incineration process, the material is actually being destroyed in its essence. I think that's the material difference between the two processes. When it comes to the question, remember, about our attitude towards the moratorium on new incineration, We cannot comment on that because we differentiate between the two processes of co-processing and incineration. And then answering the question about from the Honourable Member again, dealing with the old kilns being able to do co-processing as well. Each and every installed cement kiln will have to be subjected to the stringent emission limits that would be put up by the department. So there are some kilns that will not be able to meet those stringent requirements. Therefore, they will not be utilized for co-processing. Thank you.
Dr. Otto?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, as far as research and development concerned, I need to answer the question a little bit differently. The Honourable Member is 100% correct. Cleaner production is a competitiveness issue. We cannot as a country continue the way of processing that we utilized in the 80s and early 90s. We cannot do that and be competitive in the world. That is why, in a sense, the government is coming with much more stringent environmental regulation, because we are required, in terms of our ability to export, to do much better. Not only are we required to do it because we need to create a better environment and we need to comply with the Constitution. Now, in that regard, all of these industries that you would consider having a high environmental footprint, So you're looking at chemical industry, you're looking at mining, you're looking at mineral processing, these paper making, these kinds of industries. All of them are on an ongoing basis doing research and development into cleaner methods of production. How can they minimize their waste generated? How can they reduce the toxicity of the waste generated or the hazardness of the waste generated? What constantly following international trends in new waste treatment technologies, what are the new possibilities? If one looks at how we would use high temperature today compared to how we would use high temperature 10 years ago, completely different technologies and much more controllable technologies so that you can control the output also. So that we do on a continuous basis. We work very closely with the Department of Trade and Industry who supports the National Cleaner Production Center. And Chair, it may be a good idea in the light of the question that we request the DPI to look very specifically at a work item on this matter, which currently it's not a specific work item on the agenda of that National Cleaner Production Center, but I think there may be a case to be made to do that. That is something that I think we could certainly consider. I'm concerned about the concept of a moratorium, Chair. I must be honest. Because a moratorium says, for the next 5 years, for example, I can't think about incineration as a technology. Which means that you then close the door to a number of good possibilities. And I think that the key question for us is not so much whether incineration should then be technology of last resort, but it's to recognize the necessity in many cases of high temperature treatment, that you need to have a much more stringent approach than you would have to other cases. So, for example, burned bagasse, the waste from sugar refining to generate energy in the sugar refining industry, it is a completely different thing in terms of health impact, pollution, all than if you take a hazardous chemical waste and you burn that. It's not the same at all. So that when you say that you want to have incineration as a technology of last resort, it shouldn't be in all cases so. And it shouldn't be, we need to understand the different kinds of processes that we're talking about when we use the word incineration. I think, and it's difficult in law, Chair, that's the challenge. Because in law you have to define what you mean by a particular word for the purposes of that law. And I think that's where we perhaps are the challenge and where we need to spend a bit of time. So I was interested to see how the department is going to deal with that. Because if you said incineration is all high temperature treatment as your definition in the law, and you then said it's the technology of last resort, we would have a difficulty. However, if you said incineration means the following thing, and only in this case do you have to do this kind of risk assessment before you can use incineration, it's a different case. So I don't know if I can explain myself well, Chair, but it would be that kind of approach that we would be quite ready to support, because we are not in any way saying that it does not need to be regulated. It does.
The sugar bagasse and the other muddling grass one are not straw men that you are throwing to the committee. You are sensitive to the argument or to the concerns that were held. Okay. With that, let me. Okay.
No.
Yeah. Now, the question about the moisture, the context of the moisture is not a malicious one. It's a consideration. You see, the point is that we must accept that incineration is not the idea. Right? That's number one. Number two, positive another premise that people who want to get into the incineration business are doing two things. Either they become innovators or they use existing role models. And say, oh, who's doing so badly? I can also, it might be C, might be two. So that's how people get into business. They use existing practices and say, that's good enough competition. Or they say, no, look, we've got a better idea. But then the point is now, those who are not creating to start new things will use the existing role models, which are imperfect, and then crowd the stage and make it even more difficult, because currently we are trying to battle with cleaning the stage. Now, if we want to clean the stage, they're trying to shoot you, the roof is leaking, but you're putting too many little buckets there instead of going up to the roof and cleaning all fresh to give you a chance to mop up. Because if we come with many buckets and shine them and clean it, then the roof is leaking, but you say, don't forget about, stopping the, sealing the roof. Let's be busy on the floor. We'll forever be trying to mop up the floor. So we are having a double approach, a double from the approach. Like, seal the roof so as to reduce the number of leaks on the roof whilst you are mopping up. So the floor is not too dirty. But if you carry on now mopping up the floor, but you can see that there are too many leaks on the roof there, you will just be like a foul, you know, going forwards and backwards. So the idea of moral research, that is the context, it's not the malicious one. It's how you do the response in this context. That's the word now. How would you countenance the situation where we say, right? If the law is passed, like this is meant to be good law, but there's a good law proactively as on the side of caution by saying, for the next 10 years, newcomers were excited and have got no clear. Stop a little bit. We want to clear the clean stage. I think that's the idea. Not to paralyze the industry. Allow the ones that is existing, but regulated, whilst we're giving the R&D enough chance to come up with a better, well, let's call it the panacea of incineration.
And then Mr. Peek, I'm happy to come as well.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Okay, thank you, Honourable Chair. This is a fascinating debate, and I mean, it's very interesting. It would have been very interesting to have had it last week, in fact, where we would have had industry and the NGOs arguing with each other. I think that would have been a very interesting debate. And I think that what it raises for us as DTA is the fact that as government, what we need to do in carrying out our constitutional mandate is to regulate in the interest of the public. And the interest of the public is everyone. And the question of how you then balance competing in different interests is the fundamental question that as government you need to take into account in your making. And the question of how you as a regulator ensure that balance is found, I think, is a dilemma that is posed by this. So I think that in relation to waste, what fundamentally our problem is as government is that we're sitting in a country and in a world where effectively there's a particular lifestyle choices have been made, and particular over the last 150 years, there's been an industrial revolution that has created a particular way of being in the world. And it's created steel processing, and it's created mineral beneficiation, and it's created a huge hydrocarbon industry, and it's created motor vehicles, and it's created, with all of that, mountains of waste. And waste is the thing that people don't want to look at. It's kind of, it's a part of one's lifestyle and the byproduct that no one wants to think about, but as government we sit with this huge dilemma of what do we do about it. In South Africa, I think the problem is fundamentally for decades. I mean, up until about 15 years ago, there wasn't any real regulation or any real attempt to manage those waste streams. So we've got this huge legacy problem where you've had inappropriate methods of dealing with waste. We haven't implemented the waste hierarchy in South Africa in any kind of way. Industrial waste has generally, in many cases, been kind of left where it is. There's been a rudimentary control system that was put in place that is wholly inadequate. And the question lies, with this legislation, how do we write the problem? And I think that in this debate, there are a whole lot of things that really come together that apply much more broadly than the question of incineration. For us, I think that as government, what we would, our approach is that you need a menu of options. We want to implement a waste hierarchy. We would like, in the first place, to ensure that less waste is produced or that no waste is produced. And I think that all of the things in the bill around the life cycle assessment and start looking at actual production and supporting clean production, in the long run, are the things that are going to start achieving that, as well as the waste minimization programs that we're talking with and the ability to put in place regulations that are going to say, looking at packaging, for example. The packaging industry into the long term, you might want to place certain kinds of a regulatory framework that is going to minimize packaging so that there's less stuff to throw away at the end. So I think that for us is the starting point, is implement the waste hierarchy. With disposal as a last resort, and our disposal methods in this country are predominantly you throw it onto a landfill site or you burn it. That is where we sit. There are a number of other technologies internationally that are used, much more advanced forms of burning things. So last week, member Kralem spoke about the plasma conversion as a technology where you're effectively burning it, but at much, much higher temperatures than anything we've ever seen. It's a very advanced form of the technology. You don't have it. You have other forms of treatment methods. You have autoclaving. You have different forms. So for us, we're saying that we think that all of those technologies have a place where it's appropriate, and that one should be encouraging innovation, and one should be encouraging best practice and more efficient forms of waste disposal where you've got to dispose, where you can't deal with that waste stream in any other way right the way along it. That's the approach that we wanted, and I think that for that reason, we kind of feel that there are, as I said last week, as serious problems with landfilling as there are with incineration. Now, we don't think that any of them are particularly wonderful ways of doing things, but they are, in a sense, they're necessary evils of the way we function, of the way our economy and our society functions, and we need to manage them effectively. So I think that really that has been our approach. And so we wanted to say that we needed to, the way we want to regulate is that firstly through the parts of this bill that implement the waste hierarchy, then through being able to regulate individual facilities. And I think there's two things here. The one is the licensing process in this bill, which looks at the waste facility. And then secondly, using the other suite of environmental legislation, which we mustn't forget. So the EIA system. Basically, landfills, any waste facility has got to have an EIA first or an environmental authorization. That environmental authorization might be obtained through a risk assessment. It might be obtained through an EIA in the way that we have EIAs now. It might be a whole form of studies and assessments that you want to do that would result in an environmental authorization before that facility is actually constructed or when that facility is substantially retrofitted or expanded. You would want to do that level of assessment. Secondly, in relation to anything that has these air quality issues, you're going to use the Air Quality Act to regulate those emissions. And we are in the process of setting emission standards and engaging with industry around emission standards that will be set through the Air Quality Act so that those licenses are going to need to comply with what comes out of any SAC. Or the odors that come off landfill sites, for that matter, are going to need to be managed and minimized and not pose a hazard to human health. So I think that when we're looking at the regulatory framework, it's a combination of all of the deep suite of environmental and management acts that come into play in relation to these facilities, and we would see that the quite strict application of regulation is really, for us as government, the only way that we're going to get things under control. In the public hearing, there was community after community that stood up and raised huge concerns around dust from cement kilns. Now, as you know, we have spent the last year doing compliance inspections of the ferroalloy industry, and it has had some very interesting spin-offs, including a huge amount of voluntary compliance, facilities that weren't compliant coming forward proactively with plans to us, in some cases we've had to nudge them along with some level of law enforcement actions, but nevertheless, we've had big companies putting hundreds of millions of rand now onto their balance sheet over a period of time in order to put in place, do the capital investment that is going to mean that their environmental performance is improved. And generally, it's been something that has been very positive. So what we've identified, as we said last week, is that we really listened very carefully to what was said by those communities in the public hearing. And we've agreed that in terms of our compliance program for this year, that we will identify the paper and pulp industry as well as the cement industry in order to do those kinds of compliance inspections that we did for the ferroalloy and metals industry, and then look from there. So that I think that kind of linked to it, we've already started to put that monitoring, that compliance monitoring regime, start to implement proactively. So I just wanted to make those general points. We have some specific amendments to make. We think that we've got to keep the space for innovation open. We have many incinerators in public hospitals, for example, across the country that are little more than hot fires. And we really think the space has got to exist to be able to close those things down and to be able to look at better, to look at facilities if they are going to be repaired through incineration, to look at them actually setting up facilities that can achieve better environmental performance. So we think that to kind of stop dead where we are, keep the status quo for 5 or 10 years is going to be really counterproductive. Because in fact what you want is better performance. You don't want to sit with the kind of take those problems into the future. You want to be able to get rid of them. And we think that the setting of emission standards as well as a range of other regulatory mechanisms would mean that in fact what you would do is you would get that innovation that would result in better environmental performance. So our concern about a moratorium is that it would stop that. And we would sit in 5 or 10 years' time with our ancient infrastructure in even worse shape than it is at the moment, instead of having used the time to, in fact, put the money together and put inside new infrastructure that can do better. So I think really that's fundamentally what our concern is, because we would want to see an active improvement program, whether it's an improvement in landfills, and in landfill management, obviously we want with that the reduction of the volumes going to landfill. We still need to look at the issue of the amount of hazardous waste. We are, with our compliance, the hazardous waste sites are filling up rapidly, so we're going to have to look at that kind of problem. Incinerators, our sense is increasingly that you probably, in order to reach the levels of environmental performance we want, you're probably looking at much fewer and maybe much bigger facilities. So instead of having 100 incinerators, you might want 20 incinerators, but you want those incinerators to be able to cope with high volume, to be very sophisticated. And then we would like the full range of technologies that are available internationally to be able to be in this country, so that you are being able to use other non-thermal but very sophisticated methods of dealing with waste and with hazardous waste. So in amending, what we've done, and we'll come on to that, is we've tried to, really that is the approach that we've embodied. We've tried to tighten up the licensing, but at the same time allow for the range alongside all of the other measures that there are in the legislation.
Good morning, committee members, and thanks, Chair, for allowing me to speak. I think it's an important debate, and I think it just continually informs us of the serious concern that is on the table, and that it's the type of debate that will resolve and get us to better law and better practice on the ground. I do not think that this debate in any way can be solved in the 6 hours of last week and 3 hours of this week. And it's important to be able to, through this legislation, ensure that while what Ms. Yarwood said around we don't want to possibly be stuck with those bad incinerators, that practice that she proposes, if you turn that around and you allow for the cement industry to burn, and you allow for medical waste incinerators to come up, that in itself might put us in a position where we're stuck with something, where in future we might not want it, or where we don't want it now. So I think that debate cuts both ways. Groundwork is committed, and specifically Groundwork is committed with the community people to be able to take this debate forward in a constructive manner, so it assists us. And what is critical, I, Chairperson, I recognize the challenge you face about this legislation at this particular time, as we are in an election year. And we would most certainly want to see that whatever is done does not close us down, but rather builds on what has happened here over the last 3 days since last week. A few slight responses that I would like to make is that the EU, specifically around cement kilns, around energy recovery, states that it has to be efficient waste to energy recovery, and that is critical. And the reality is, as many of the committee members spoke about, is that we do have old kilns in South Africa. The one in New Brighton, not across the road, but on the fence line of communities, is an incinerator that I think Edmund was built in the 30s, if I'm wrong, or 40s. But it's way back. So that is critical to understand. I think the issue around the question of unintended consequences, I do reflect from the department, and I think the department was correct to raise that, and we'd like to work through that process to understand. If one says a ban, if one says a moratorium, what does that mean? And my feeling, I just want to clarify with the committee, is that firstly, and an example today is clear of that, when we talk about waste gases in the industry, we have not opposed those processes. Sasol today, in the business report, has just made public a process to take its waste gases to use as energy. We did not oppose that, Chairperson, although we knew about it, because we recognize the importance of that. What I highlighted last week is that how those industries sometimes misuse that process and flare improperly and operate improperly. And I don't want that to happen. But we've never, ever opposed that. The other reality about the gas, what is often referred to as biomass, again, we did not oppose that. We opposed the burning of waste in the Mondi paper mill in South Durban with the South Durban Community Environmental Alliance, because it wasn't only burning biomass, it was burning the waste that came from the plant, the ash waste, which the Department of Water Affairs itself said was high hazardous waste. And we opposed that. Unfortunately, that went through. The critical thing about research and development, and it's something that I think is very important to recognize. We want to strive to go a step further every time we do something in South Africa. And I believe, and Groundwork believes very strongly, that if there was no levy on the tires being developed, the cement industry would not be that interested in the tires. Because that in itself, we believe, in our research that we have, would fund the retrofitting of their plants. But what we should be doing with our tire levy, honorable committee members, is taking that tire levy and plowing it into R&D to find alternatives to use those tires to make our roads safer, to improve our roads, and that is a worldwide recognized process of using waste tires. Now, processes, we need to plow the money into that in a democratic way in order that we can see whether those processes can happen in South Africa. Because it is critical, and again, Lorraine Rotter from the Chemical Halides Industrial Association, although it's Booster today, Lorraine represented Booster, agreed with Groundwork, and I think we'll still agree with Groundwork. Before we do anything on the hazardous waste, solid hazardous waste management in this country, we need to recognize and understand what solid hazardous waste we have. And in a process in February last year or January that the department ran, we came to that agreement. But we don't have the research and the understanding of what solid waste we have. So therefore, you can't necessarily do the R&D to say how you deal with that hazardous solid waste. But what you can say is that if you burn it, it will go away, because some research has been done elsewhere on this. So I think that is critical to be able to when one looks at research and development. And that issue, and I want to say again, we made and we put this issue forward in the National Environment. I put it forward in the National Environmental Advisory Forum the day I resigned from the forum a year and a half ago. To say that to Minister Van Salswijk is that in this forum, mandate the process to be able to get to understand what hazardous waste we have in the country, because it's going to come back and bite us. And indeed it is coming back to bite us. In terms of, and I think, I just want to reflect briefly on what Edmund had said about health and the communities around this mental. I am tempted to say that there has been no health investigation done on the impact of the cement kilns on communities around those cement industries. Edmund manages six of those cement kilns as PPC and work for Alton, so he should know. I don't think we know of any of that. Now the challenge is, how do we develop this process and to be able to take this bill forward? And what you said last week, I want to support. The portfolio committee is tolerating incineration. This is a common, in the debate, not a full stop. We need to look at it as last resort. And this is a complex and controversial matter. And we must not leave it hanging, and that regulation on incineration must come through this committee. Now, I think those are some of the things that is critical to understand and to be able to reflect upon. And I think the issue of a moratorium or a closing or slowing down is important in light of what was said last year. And the LCA, by the way, within the bill, the stuff on lifetime cycle analysis is a bit detailed. It goes a bit beyond just the framework. It mentions some issues which it would like to look at. So I think there is room in the bill to put a bit of detail around incineration on. For me, the most important thing is that if we do have a moratorium, we will not be closing down the space to get the department to act on improper waste incinerators, because it is the Air Quality Act that they can use and they can enforce. There is even the old ACCA, believe it or not, that you can use. I know there's a debate about whether you actually can close down an industry using the old ACCA. I never got to the bottom of that debate. But the reality is you can enforce and you can use the old ACCA. Thank you very much, Chair, for the time.
Madam Roo?
Thank you, sir. I don't want to speak at length, but I would like to pick up on what has been said about distinguishing between categories of incineration. I think it's important that the Act deal with that, but the law writers will have to say how, as regards industrial incineration, I feel the Act should tie us down to saying something such as that as technology develops through R&D or whatever worldwide, that will be the requirement for licensing of industrial incineration. You know, that be brought in, that can be constant check on it, and a raising of the standards. And then, as regards the other solid waste, medical waste, hazardous waste, and particularly municipal waste, for those, I think, it's not unreasonable to say that for those we would expect that there has been proper sorting. In medical waste, you do certain sortings. Only certain things need to be dealt with. I would hazardous waste, I can't say my expertise so much, but even then I think there are categories of hazardous waste you could distinguish between. And then from the municipal waste particularly, that you have your wet waste and your dry waste, the cement industry I think is rather keen to use full, unsorted, solid municipal waste because there's more energy in that. Is it not so? I'm speaking, but particularly if there isn't, then we must still sort. If you can best burn the plastic part or whatever, but that there be the sorting process and recycling what can be recycled, and only then can as a final resort. But these processes, I feel we must specify in the Act, and then the detail of that will go in the regulations, which can go into more detail with it. And there's just one other point. You said we should take specific items. The item I'd like to be specific on that worries me is the definition of the word recovery. I don't know if that's been changed. I put it in my input. I never get any feedback on that. But recovery is defined in the bill as extraction of energy from waste. Now, that's a very wide blanketing thing. I think it's unreasonable. And cited every instance in the Act where this occurs, at least 7 instances. It says, you deal with waste, with reduction, recycling, whatever, and then recovery is there. So it's in every single definition of this where they give the processes that should be followed, that are allowed. Now, I feel that recovery in a different way is an incineration process. That can't be lumped in with a good reduce, recycle, reuse. You know those? Oh. So if you could please look at that and get that clarified. Or specified as an incineration process.
Jump point, Mr. Mullock, and then after that we'll come to the teaching. We'll have to move forward.
Yes, Chairperson. Yeah, I'm interested to hear more about the DDG as a proposal, you know. She did give us a good idea, but I'd like to see something more in detail in terms of the afterthoughts they've had, which is good, but it shows that the department is listening. When we come to hearings, you don't just look at the blink of the phone and say, this is the draft. So it's good, it serves the purpose of public hearing. But I think she and other people are misunderstand the moratorium. The suggestion of moratorium is only for new entrants. It doesn't paralyze anything. It actually gives you a breathing space.
So because the whole point is that now, at the moment we're dealing with primitive technology and what is perceived to be improved technology. But we know that there's still something better there. So instead of allowing everybody, those who are emulating, come to the stage, say, stop. So now we can have a chance to do it. It does not mean you actually disturb the industry. It doesn't say that. So the moratorium does not mean you freeze everything. You only put a barrier on those who are excited at new entrants, who don't know what is the danger, the challenge on the other side of the world.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to find out from the cement industry, would you be interested in banning the 85% tariff that you're talking about, but forsake the levy imposed on that and let that levy be directed into setting up a trust that would benefit communities that are affected by what you are doing when, you know,
response and then we'll try and move forward.
Thank you for that question, Honourable Member. I'll be quick. The use of co-processing of tires as a fuel has a significant impact on our processes. So we would not be able to forego the levy, because we need to use a certain, we need to be paid to use the tires, to co-process the tires, in order for us to do it successfully. In order for us to put the equipment in place, you must understand we're a business. And we need to generate the savings from that exercise. With regard to establishing a community fund to as a co-benefit, we will have to go back to our members to that, and we will go back to our member companies, and we will propose that to them. That is as far as I can go with that at the moment. Does that answer your question?
I think that we've done more than what we had promised the industry. We've given you almost 2 hours to. So, while we had invited you to the public hearing. I think that we have to move forward with this. I'm not convinced. I think we all appreciate that there are various streams of waste, okay? And that others just need sorting out, etc., etc. And that what we're basically saying is that we wouldn't want an easy way out for industry. Where the easiest way, because fine, we are an industry, we've got to make money, we agree with that. But we wouldn't want to encourage a situation where the easiest route is that you just spend everything. You know, it's easier, there's no complication, you do not make any effort to internalize the difficulties and the challenges that we as a society are having with incineration. There are problems in incineration, and we have got to take some steps around minimizing those problems. We're not banning. That's why therefore the choice of the word banning is an origin. But unfortunately, we did not say there's going to be any ban. What we are saying, we want to bring a process in which we'll understand that if we want to do it, let it be something of an afterthought. Now, what you've not answered, which is what I think Honorable Nkwena was raising, was will there be an economic effect of that? If we're saying that we come with an economic, if you feel that we can't go this route because of the economic danger or whatever, make the case. You've not made that case. The whole morning, no one has made the case that if we say information is the last resort, you will affect our industry. No one has made that case. We're waiting to hear that. But if there's not any such a problematic economic case, then we should indeed try and discourage incineration and use it indeed as a last resort. Pending, of course, technology. If there are technologies that can, in which the problem does not arise, then why should we stop incineration? We have no case to stop it. If the technology there is clean, etc., etc. So, to the extent that we do not have that technology now, then we must take these precautionary measures. But we are not going to encourage incineration. It should be looked at as a matter of last resort. I hope this summary takes us forward, TTG. And therefore, maybe we could invite you now to comment. You may want to comment on my summary. If you want, Dr. Lotta, I can indulge you, and then we'll go to the GDG.
Chair, I would really, if you allow me, I would prefer to hear the GDG because it's really in the detail that we may have a problem.
Okay.
So in principle, we understand you and are clear, but we would then like to see what the detail is.
Okay, thank you, Chair. And I think that in response, I mean, I think effectively we have to start talking about language. I mean, essentially what we were told to do at the end of last week
was, I think that there were a number of issues around amendments, not only around incineration. I mean, I think that in the hearing before, we went through and we gave a response to the portfolio committee relating to the comments that had been received, that had been heard in the public hearings, what changes we thought should be made, as well as the comments that had been made from the portfolio committee, and so we tried to put some of those into language. The other thing is that we agreed is that we needed to tighten up on the issue of incineration, and we've spent some time doing some work around that. I think that there were two things. The one thing is that there was a clear instruction to put a provision into the Act that required regulations regarding incineration must come to the Portfolio Committee and must be considered by the Portfolio Committee, and we put that into the Act, into the bill. And then the other thing that we put into the bill was a set of requirements around the licensing that would, for incineration, that would mean that there's a set of things that would need to be looked at in relation to an application for a facility that involves incineration that you must not look at in relation to other facilities, and we put language to that. And then we had quite a big difficulty, and I'd like to explain the difficulty, is we then looked at whether we shouldn't require something general at a policy level around incineration to go into the National Waste Management Strategy, the problem being that we don't do it for landfilling or for any other disposal method. And we were very, quite reluctant because, you know, I mean, we didn't want to send the message that the other forms of waste disposal are more acceptable than incineration, because in our view they have different but major problems, environmental problems. So, I mean, we were quite concerned about saying, well, incineration is actually the problem in South Africa, when in actual fact we have this huge problem in landfills and in illegal landfills and in effectively water waste dumps on industrial sites that contain that aren't licensed and that require quite toxic mixtures of chemicals that are and other substances sitting there. So we've got something, we can talk about that, but we were quite concerned about the message that that would send. So I think in response is to say, I think that we have heard many, many views on the matter. Our view as the department still remains that we, as government, that our job is to regulate technology, that we should not be upfront banning any particular technology. What we want is a clear demonstration that any particular technology that the private sector or that a government or an state comes forward with can meet the performance standards that are required in terms of emission standards, in terms of getting through an EIA, in terms of meeting the license conditions that need to be achieved in terms of this legislation. So that really is our fundamental approach. Other considerations are clearly that in the world of climate change and greenhouse gases, we want to encourage clean technology, and we want to encourage technologies that result in a reduction in greenhouse gases. And there are many international initiatives that are happening, looking at particular industrial sectors, where and looking at innovation and cleaner technologies in those industries that will result in a reduction in greenhouse gases, and some of those are likely to be thermal or technologies that we haven't yet thought about, and that we don't want to risk kind of shutting out of South Africa without in fact having looked at them. So we feel very, as I explained, have explained over and over again, our approach has always been that we don't we require technologies to achieve standards, not make decisions on technologies, because it's an intervention which has a set of consequences that we neither understand nor can control. Finally, I think that on the incineration issue, as we explained and as we distributed the documents, we are engaged in a policy process on incineration. It started because, as I explained, we were getting inconsistent and problematic EIA decisions across the country in relation to cement kilns, because there wasn't a coherent national policy and there weren't emission standards set that would mean that that particular level of environmental performance was consistent across the country. And that policy process is not yet concluded. There is a draft document, comments have been received on that document, those comments have been included, and there's going to be in this year a further round of public consultation
In particular, we want to go out to the provinces and consult more broadly and consult in places that mean the communities who haven't been able to get to meetings in Pretoria can come to meetings to express their views. So we'll be running that process. And then later on in the course of the year, I think that when we get to draft two on that policy, we should bring it to back also to a presentation to Parliament. So for us, that is a process that is underway, and then the outcome of that process would then guide the licensing conditions that would then set the licensing conditions and form the basis of whatever regulations we would bring back to Parliament on how we would license. So really there is a policy process that I would say is probably about 66% through the process, but it really isn't concluded yet, that we would need to still come back with. So I think that with that, Chair, I don't know if you want to then get onto the text and onto the amendments. Can I just say one thing? We have quite a difficulty in terms of, we have the definition of incineration into the legislation, and it is a broad definition. And in the absence of our imperfect knowledge of exactly what happens in every industry in this country, we felt that we couldn't narrow. You might want to narrow in regulations and distinguish in regulations at a later stage, but at this point in time, we thought that to go for a definition that was too narrow, we should try and eliminate this kind of incinerator as opposed to that kind of incinerator would probably cause problems. We would have definitional problems. So really we have gone for a broad definition of incineration that we felt would then encompass, mean that any of those thermal procedures at the moment that require air quality licensing and EIAs would also be dealt with in this legislation. Okay, so that was our approach to the definition of incineration. We felt the detail could be added when we come to the regulations, where you could say an incinerator that is used for in the steel foundry as opposed to an incinerator that is used for healthcare risk waste, as opposed to a cement kiln, may need to be treated in different ways with different kinds of standards. But we did not at this stage want to limit the legislation by doing it in definition now. Okay, so I think that's the only other thing that I wanted to say.
To the offshore amendment?
Thank you, Chair. We have distributed, it's a pity we don't have a projector because we had actually also done a slideshow with these proposals on a slideshow. We're now moving into broadly of the legislation, and what I'm going to do is to in fact request Jenny, are you prepared to take us through? Jenny Hall is our main drafter, supported by our acting chief director of legal services and the representative from the state law advisor's office, who's been the team that have worked on these amendments. Jenny to introduce, and then our other legal experts to then add or to comment on what we're proposing in terms of text to the bill.
Do you want me to start with incineration or from the beginning?
Yeah, I think so. that we go through all of them. So in fact, that what we're now starting to do is to go through all the changes to the bill that are being suggested.
I think maybe as a point of departure, Chair, just to point out we're aware that this isn't the formal format that the submission needs to be in. Mrs. Smutson, State Law Advisor, has attended to that. We just thought this may be a more accessible document for reading purposes than the formal format. Section 1 proposes a range of changes to the current definitions of, that are contained in the published version. Largely these were in response to comments that were made as part of the gazetting public comment period. To go through them line by line, what we've done is the square brackets and bold is a proposed deletion and underlining is a proposed insertion. the change to best practicable environmental option is not one that should have substantive implications. It was changed merely to reflect the definition in NEMA, so that there's a complete alignment between the two acts in case there's any confusion arises when they get enforced jointly, so it's a streamlining. Demolition waste, one of the commentators pointed out that inadvertently the definition of building waste, which was always intended to mean general waste only, could have included hazardous waste, so we proposed that we expressly provide excluding hazardous waste so that it's clear what the intention is. With hazardous waste, there was a grammatical error, which I think Bruce pointed out that elements of compounds doesn't make sense. It should have been elements or compounds. Incineration is an addition. It's a proposed new definition. We'd initially, in the documentation we submitted to the committee, proposed that it be included in Schedule 1. That was the only place where the term incineration was used at that stage as a schedule, proposed schedule process. After hearing the portfolio committee's indications of further amendments that they want, we've uplifted it here because you'll see as we move through the document, incineration is now referred to expressly. So that is one of the first changes that comes in response to the comments that were made by the portfolio committee in the last session. In earth waste, a minor comment is just the inclusion of or environment in response to public comments for clarity. Recycle was changed to ensure that there was a complete alignment with the waste definition. Part B of the waste definition, the second part of the waste definition, provides for an end of waste situation. And it was pointed out that the definition of recycle would trigger the end of waste definition more prematurely than anyone had intended or meant. So it was to address that lack of alignment. The definition of waste, again, in response to comments by during the gazetting period, basically were required for clarity. Section 4, we are proposing to remove paragraph E. Paragraph E says that the bill did not apply to organic waste that emanates from agricultural activities or forestry. Submissions were made in that regard, and the department reconsidered it and decided that it should be within the ambit of the Act. It was, the exclusion was broader than maybe had been intended, and it's now proposed that we re-include that waste by simply omitting paragraph E. Next change comes to clause 7, which is the national norms and standards. As you obviously aware, the committee last time raised two strong points of the chair's parting words to us that we should uplift the profile of separation of waste. And obviously the incineration thing. So in 7.2A, we're proposing to amend subsection A, which currently reads that the minister may, by notice in the Gazette, set norms and standards for the minimization, reuse, recycling, and recovery of waste, to amend that by, after the recovery of waste, adding words including the separation of waste at the point of generation. We did feel that the word recovery would imply separation of source, and we've been careful to not say separation of source is a distinct activity that is included within recovery, but just to uplift the profile as requested. A fairly large change comes in at clause 11, and that concerns the integrated waste management plan. There's been a big debate about this, and initial drafts were amended to reflect comments that have been received, and essentially because municipalities' integrated waste management plans would form part of the IDP, it was felt that the MEC for local government and the MEC for the Minister for Local Government should be the responsible authority for having oversight of that. certain of the provinces felt very unhappy about us. They pointed out that they have responsibilities for ensuring harmonized and consistent waste management within their province. They have responsibilities to ensure that municipalities align their plans with the provincial plan. And if all reference was taken out of the document to the MEC for environment, they would be powerless to give effect to the obligations that the bill imposed on them. In view of that, the department proposed new wording in section 11.6, sorry, 4 and 6, there's a typographical error there, to still provide that the planning be part and parcel of the IDP program so that one can follow a streamlined consultation process and not place an undue burden on the municipalities when preparing their plans and another separate and discrete planning regime. However, we've created a system where the MEC for Environment is brought into the process and has the ability to comment and require amendments and to send the plan back for adjustment or so on before it finalizes the IDP process. I think Western Cape and Gauteng particularly feel very strongly about that for the NCOP process. Section 12, we proposed an addition to 12.1b4. This should make groundwork happy. It was one of their comments. We're proposing to add the words that targets and initiatives. So in other words, we won't just be looking at initiatives. We'll be giving effect to target setting in that as well. Similarly, in 12.1e, we're proposing to add a new paragraph completely, which says established targets for the collection, minimization, reuse, and recycling of waste. That we also felt could give effect to the Portfolio Committee's comments on the separation of waste as source and would uplift, give it some more profile. In some instances, we shied away from using the word incineration, separation at source or incineration simply because it downplays other processes. So it would imply that separation is more important than composting or something else, and we didn't want by implication other good practices to be casualties of a quick amendment. Section 18 is, in my view, a minor amendment. People had wanted some criteria of when the minister could exercise his powers in respect of extended producer responsibility. We had thought initially when we drafted it that it was clear, it was about giving effect to the waste management hierarchy. And to restate that and make it clearer what the intention is, we propose adding in the words after the Minister of Trade and Industry, so the sentence would now read as proposed, the Minister, after consultation with the Minister of Trade and Industry, may, in order to give effect to the objects of this Act, by notice in the Gazette, and that would link the exercise of powers in respect of extended producer responsibility directly into Section 2, which sets out the objectives of the Act and the waste management hierarchy. Section 35 was the proposed amendment was a controversial one. You'll recall that the banks made extensive submissions on how the provisions in respect of contaminated land should not be applied to them. Research was done on the matter. I think the DDG discussed that last week when she did her presentation. And it was felt that an appropriate amendment would be to split Section 75 into a subsection 1 and a subsection 2. The subsection 2 would now read, this part does not apply to banks which held land before the commencement of this Act and which land is sold for the purposes of foreclosure, provided that the land is sold without delay. So in essence, we are proposing that insofar as the banks thought it was unfair for the section to apply retrospectively to land which they only had access to for purposes of foreclosure, we should maybe accept that comment. Regarding the prospective exclusion of application of this section to banks, the partnership with it, that was not acceptable. They have a role in the management of environmental best practice. Section 37 relates to a comment that was raised again by Busa. I think they had a difficulty with the definition of acceptable exposure. And I'm considering that comment, we thought that the definition was not so much the problem rather than the way we had referred to it in the Act. We only use that term once in the Act, and that's in section 37.2b.6. And we propose, rather than amending the definition, we give effect to the comment by changing that subparagraph to read as follows. The acceptable exposure for human and environmental receptors in that environment have been exceeded. Next proposed change pertains to the incineration. It goes to section 45, which deals with the formalities around making applications. We propose to add a whole new subsection 3 there, which again uplifts the profile of incineration and sends hopefully some of the signal that you wanted it to send. And essentially what we're saying is if application is made for an incineration process, there are certain documents, irrespective of whether regulations or details are passed generally for licensing applications that are not negotiable in the case of incineration. And we hope particularly that the qualifications B and C would address the three of the 5 points that you left us with, Chair, at the end of the last session. So the proposal is now a person who requires a waste management license for a waste management activity which involves the treatment of waste by incineration must submit, together with any documentation or information contemplated in subsection 2, information on A, the types of waste that will be incinerated, B, the existence of any incinerators in the jurisdiction of the licensing authority which are authorized to incinerate waste which is substantially similar to that waste, and C, alternative environmentally sound methods, if any, that could be used to treat the waste. Section 46, not so important. It was an editorial error that had snuck in. Essentially, the appointment of independent consultants needs to be not on a case-by-case basis by notice in the Gazette, because that's impractical. One obviously wants, as with the EIA regulations, to be able to require it directly. That slight of editing becomes important because, of course, trying to streamline the licensing process with the EIA process so there's not duplicate licensing regimes going on. And obviously we need the bill to talk to each other as much as possible so that we don't have unintended constraints in the processing of those applications which unnecessarily prevent them from being conducted together. Section 51.1, which deals with mandatory contents of waste management licenses. This again is a response to the summary that the chair made at the end of the last session, and that was relating to salvaging of waste. You'll see that we have qualified it. We said, if applicable, the license must contain the conditions in terms of which salvaging of waste may be undertaken. We've inserted the if applicable because clearly one does not want any salvaging on a hazardous waste landfill site. And if we make it mandatory to give conditions, you're saying it's been mandatory to allow salvaging on a hazardous waste landfill site. So that's why the qualification is there. IGEA overlooked section 48. Sorry, to go backwards. Section 48 pertains to the factors that the licensing authority has to take into account when they're processing an application. These are mandatory factors that must influence decision makers. We have proposed to add in a new paragraph D. This is in response to the Portfolio Committee's concern around the location of where incinerators will be located. And the proposed paragraph is, starting from the top, it would say, when considering an application for a waste management license, the licensing authority must take into account all relevant factors, including any increased health and environmental risks that may arise as a result of the location where the waste management activity will be undertaken. We haven't used the word incineration in that context because we think it would be equally important to consider the location of a landfill site as an incinerator. So that's why the wording is perhaps not as overt as you would have expected. Okay. Next proposed amendment is to section clause 68, 69. We just wanted to delete the last sentence. It's now out of line with what's there. So another editorial glitch for which the three lawyers will assume joint accountability. Section 69(1)(i). We propose two amendments to the regulatory power section. The first one is, again, to address your comments regarding uplifting the profile of the separation of waste. So in 69(1)(i), we're suggesting that it now reads, measures that must be taken in respect of the implementation of waste minimization, including insertion the separation of waste at the point of generation, and the setting of targets or percentage of products that must be recovered under a reuse, recycling, refundable deposit or take-back program. Okay. We're proposing, right at the end of section 69, it wasn't reiterated in the last meeting, but we had carried over and noted the comment from the meeting prior to that, that the Portfolio Committee was very keen to see all regulations on incineration. And we thought that could be addressed by inserting a new subsection 6, which says any regulation which pertains to the treatment of waste by means of incineration must be submitted to the National Assembly 30 days prior to publication. And we hope that would give effect to the oversight role that you were looking for. The final amendment is just one that has arisen from experience, and that's that we would like a different provision of the Act to be able to be commenced by the Minister rather than the President. It's an administrative action of minor impact in terms of requiring consultation and so on. It doesn't require that, and just the President's office is in business.
Thank you, colleague. Comments? Honorable Morgan?
Just broadly, Chair, to say that flowing out of the three meetings we've had this year on this issue, that, you know, my attention might be drawn to something else, but I think the amendments cover very well the complexity of the debate that we have had over the last 3 weeks, and I do think take this piece of legislation forward quite significantly, and notwithstanding the extra work that this committee should probably commit to do on the subject itself in the period going forward.
Yes, Chairperson, there could be an explanation for the leaving out, I wouldn't say omission, of under London standard, part two, of municipalities. Because you talk about national London standards and provincial London standards. I wonder why we left out municipalities, which is the third tier of government. Part two.
don't know why. It appears on
actual text of the bill.
Oh yeah, I'm looking at the text of the bill, yeah. Oh yeah, what is Ms. Commando's amendments?
Yeah,
okay. Yeah, no, I'm covered by the honorable Morgan. I'm appreciative of the fact that the department has released well, an extra mile to accommodate the views that they listed in public hearings. And it enhances the integrity of the bill itself. Yeah, I'm very happy about that because it gives credence to lawmaking. Yeah, the step one. We can't get everything once. They want the obviously. Most of the things will be attended to progressionally.
That's all the comments. Any other comments? Does Honorable Morgan cover? Okay. Madam Roo?
If the definition of recovery is allowed to stand, as it was in the bill, the extraction of energy from the work, then in so
okay. Could we have some comments on this CGG? I think the intervention from Madam Brew is not difficult to accommodate.
Thank you. I think that just to talk about the issue of why, essentially, if you look at part 9, clause 9, it talks about waste service standards. It doesn't talk about municipal norms and standards. But if you look at the content of what is in Part 9, effectively it is giving some level of direction to municipalities on how they should carry out their function. And essentially the reason for that is with a very long interaction with the state law advisors around the fact that that refuse removal, that there are certain of the waste functions are an exclusive function of municipal, the municipal sphere of government. And there's limited ability of national or provincial government to then tell municipalities how to carry out those functions. So the advice from the state law advisor was that we talk about waste service standards and that we then set out the extent very carefully what the constitutional ability is of national provincial government to be able to set out how the municipalities carry out that function. So that's it. It was related to, I think, quite a technical constitutional thing to find language that did not infringe on the constitutional function of municipality, but that got that relationship between the three spheres correct. But the content of it, I think, really does allow us to set out what municipalities need to do. Okay. I think that was the first two of recycle. I think that our understanding is that we accommodated the point that Grant work and that the other NGOs have made. I'm not certain. I'm going to ask Ms. Hall to look at it because she looked at the, to talk to us because she'd looked at it. In the very first, I know that in the very first version of the bill that was sent out for public comment, we made a mistake in that we talked about recovery as recovery of energy from waste, and we corrected that at quite an early stage in the process, so that this version does not have that in anymore. So I think that in fact that we broadened
recovery so that it was not, it was recovery across the board and not recovery of energy, which is what was in that very first published version of the bowl. And a number of people made the comment that this is just, it's narrow and it's limiting and you need to recover for the sake of recovery. Yeah. So I think it has been addressed. And I think that my lawyers must now engage with it.
Put lawyers comment.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Recovery means the controlled extraction of a material. So what we've said is that it is extraction. So you're recovering something or the retrieval of energy from waste to produce a product, so it is both. In our view, we couldn't see that we had limited it only to energy. It talks about the extraction of a material, which I think the point was that in that very first version, which was sent out for public comment, it wasn't in.
But you see, environmental issues are a national competency. Now, why would we be advised to have nothing and some set for national information, but no go area for municipalities, they can have their own customized municipal nominal standards? Well, then bring that same argument to the EIA? Because of national, they are not the standards, and you cannot do a situation where municipalities have their own little regional or EIAs. Because national, not the standards of waste management. For national, provincial, but nothing about municipalities, they can do their own little, customized municipal norms. I find that very, very difficult. Because what it effectively does, it just ties up the heads of national. Now, that shall not pronounce on our organization, Sikama or Soweto, or Ugulatu, but our own little thing here, our own little standard. You see, that's a problem.
Ms. Paul will respond. She's got her constitution out because I think that it requires a discussion of the constitution and therefore what in the view of the state law advisor one has to do in order to make this bill constitutional. So maybe Jenny, over to you.
Thank you. It is indeed a big problem, Honourable Member, and you'll see, I'm sure my colleagues... Huh? I said it is a big problem, and you'll see my colleagues on the state law advisor probably fidgeting around. It's been a very difficult thing for the two of us to resolve and bring it together. Essentially, as we know, the difficulty stems from the fact that the municipal function is a Schedule 5 Part B function. In other words, it's an exclusive function where national is supposed to be hands-off. It's also important the Constitution uses wording that is not aligned with the kind of terminology that one uses in the waste management world at the moment, and it refers to they have powers for refuse removal, refuse dumps, and solid waste disposal. So it's a very broad, difficult issue, and where we had to work very hard was drawing extensively on the override provision to try and manage municipalities by pushing the parameters as far as we could but not beyond the point that the state law advisor wouldn't defend us in the constitutional court if there was a challenge. And if you look at the provisions, they have been pushed quite far, and I think in certain instances, and would be very hard to push further without a constitutional amendment. So for example, if you look at section 9.2, the first portion of the wording is aimed at recognizing the competence and authority of the municipality, and the second one is trying to bring in national override functions. So we say each municipality must exercise its executive authority and perform its duty in relation to waste services, including waste collection, waste storage, and waste disposal services by A, adhering to all national and provincial norms and standards. And that really is our angle in to say we are entitled in terms of Section 44 of the Constitution to pass norms and standards where it's necessary for service delivery, and hence that's why the heading change from local municipalities to waste service standards, and triggering our powers under Section 44 of the Constitution, we can exercise control over the municipalities. Maybe I can just finish. We also say that we stipulate their powers under B, C, D, E, and F, where we say they have to provide for sustainable services and effective management. There must be affordable prices. They must ensure access to all for the services. Those are all aimed at developing key problems, addressing key problems like backlogs.
When you look at the bill itself, first page, the third page, it's a content. It says national norms and standards, provincial norms and standards, and it doesn't municipal norms and standards. It says something, waste management standards. Now, you see, why fight the issue? Sorry, hold on, it's a minute. That's exactly the problem that we have as a portfolio committee when we go for oversight to municipalities. They have an attitude. See, what do you guys want here? We have a responsibility.
Yeah, I think that essentially we agree with Member Mokoena. However, I think you will remember that this bill was much later coming to Parliament than you had expected it. And the reason for that was that, in fact, the state law advisor felt that they were unable to certify the bill unless we created this formulation, which in their view did not infringe on the constitutional function of municipality. So I think really this is an issue which is outside, I mean, the department. I think that it's complex because you have the Municipal Systems Act which sets out how municipalities carry out your function. You've got a constitution that says there are certain things that are an exclusive municipal competence. In other words, other spheres of government don't have a say over it. And then you've got the fact that national government needs to set national norms and standards and set national policy and framework, and also ensures the things that may impinge on the economic functioning of the country are not happening, are happening in a way that is consistent. So we spent a very long time talking about how that requirement for national government to set national policy, national framework, norms and standards, and to be able to ensure the economic unity and economic consistency in the way that the country is run, and exclusive constitutional competence of municipalities to carry out those functions that are set out in those schedules, can be put together in something that is going to ensure that you're getting proper waste management carried out. And this was, in a sense, what that wording was. But I mean, really, I think that there is something that we felt eventually was way outside of our ability to control. And I think the state law advisor eventually felt very
satisfied that we'd arrived at a formulation that allowed to set the parameters for municipalities, but that didn't go over the bounds that could be constitutionally defensible. I think that's really all that we can say about that.
Advisor, can you comment on this?
It was a long discussion. The constitutionality, it was a very difficult exercise, and we don't want Parliament or the President to another a bill going to the Constitutional Court, and we endeavour to achieve while not being too prescriptive to municipalities to have a suitable satisfactory end result in the bill. So there was a very long discussion. The Chief State Law Advisor, Mr. Daniels, also took personal interest in it. He was actively involved in this process. I haven't looked at the provision regarding the regulations. Again, why I'm hesitant is that I'll have to see whether we can prescribe to a municipality that they must make regulations. If I may, I would prefer to have time to study the possibility of such provision. But I don't have any doubt that they would have the power to make their own bylaws simply by virtue of the fact that they are listed in Schedule 5, that Constitution is listed in Schedule 5 of the Constitution.
May I point out that what we have done is, if you read Section 9.1 and Section 2, we've recognized the executive authority of municipalities to provide the service. Then in number 2, we've then set out a set of criteria, A to F, that sets out how the municipality must perform its duties, including waste collection, waste storage, and waste disposal. And we say they've got to adhere to all national norms and national and provincial norms and standards. They've got to ensure that the waste management plans are done. And then we've got things around servicing and pricing. So I think that in fact what we have said is you have to do it within the framework, but we've done it within that overall thing that they must exercise their function, but in exercising their function, they must adhere to whatever the national norms and standards are. So I think that really, I mean, this is what delayed the bill for 3 months. It was the debate around how you get the wording in this section correct, and I think that, yeah, really it is what it is at this point, and maybe if the State Law Advisor can look at it. Then in the Constitution 156.2, says the municipality may make and administer bylaws for effective administration of the matters which it has the right to administer, and that's also what we've then set out. We've said, we haven't said we're going to do it for them, we've said they've got to do it in relation to this. Yeah.
We should not, as a parliament, substitute for the citizen responsibility of social movement. I think we've set the framework, let social movements mobilize the people to deal with some of these issues. We cannot legislate everything. So with that, let's move on. I think, unless there's a comment, we've all indicated that broadly we're covered by this legislation. Topic. I'll indulge you, that this should be the last comment to make.
Yeah, unfortunately, Chair Turan as well. That's Firstly, I think I'm going to be contentious as usual, but in terms of incineration, the definition of incineration, I want to say that incineration means any method, technique, or process to convert waste for recovery, and that should be included, and to flue gases and residues by means of oxidation. Okay, that's the first thing I'd like to say. And if one then looks at what one has in the recovery section, one should put in recovery under the definition. Recovery means the controlled extraction of a material from waste to produce a product. So you're very clear about where, i.e., and the interesting thing is in discussions at public meetings with the consultants sometimes, they consult the GIS as incineration. So that's what I wanted to put there. Then two more things I would like to say. I would like to ask on the banking sector, Jenny, I don't have an understanding through the chair that Section 35, you say this part does not apply to the banks which held land before the commencement of this act and which land is sold for the purposes of foreclosure, provided that the land is sold without delay. But the question we have is, what happens if that land is not sold? Who's responsible for it? Because it's still contaminating the environment. The bank might not be responsible, but exactly who? And then, finally, in section 45 on your handout this morning, number 3, I would like to add section 45.3b, the existence of any incinerators and alternatives in the jurisdiction of the licensing authority, which are authorized to treat waste, which is substantially similar to that waste, but, you know. So I just want to add an alternative, not just leave it to incineration. And having said that, Mr. Chairperson, I would like to thank you for this opportunity. Due to family commitments, unfortunately, I have to leave to get back to family commitments. This often quite urgently. So thank you once again. But my colleague will remain, Mr. Chairperson.
Mr. Chairperson, if I may, I have to vehemently disagree with Mr. Speak on his suggestion.
Okay. Look, I think that also whatever Mr. Speak was raising would have to come back to the committee as well. I think overall as the committee, we think that we should try to accommodate everyone as much as we can. If the committee is comfortable with the present form of the amendment, I think we should comfortable with that. We'll try to touch in principal concerns of everyone. So I really wouldn't want us to open this at infinitum. So with that, that's more as nokadah. We can still come back on some of these issues. It's an unfolding process. So please let's stick with the consensus that we have across party lines on the amendment. So unless there are any comments from the members, I think that now to go for going forward, what we will do now, firstly, we need to get a mover for the amendment. For this amendment. Honorable Maluleke moves. Any seconder? Honorable Morgan, thank you. And then we'll come to the formal stage now with the motion of desirability. Okay. That, in the opinion of the committee, for motion of desirability, National Environment Management Waste Bill 39 of 2007. That in the opinion of the committee, legislation is desirable to reform the law regulating waste management in order to protect health and the environment. There's a spelling mistake. By providing reasonable measures for the prevention of pollution and ecological degradation and for securing ecological sustainable development. To provide for institutional arrangements and planning matters to provide for national norms and standards for regulating the management of waste by all spheres of government, to provide for specific waste management measures, to provide for the licensing and control of waste management activities, to provide for the remediation of contaminated land, to provide for the national waste information system, to provide for the compliance and enforcement, and to provide for matters connected therewith. Moved by myself, sorry, to be signed by me. Can we move over this? Motion of desirability. Matamas and presented by another figure. Yeah, and that should go to, I should sign this. Now, in terms of the way forward, we will meet again on Thursday. I think in the afternoon on Thursday, to go through this legislation section by section. With that, I want to say in conclusion, that indeed this has been a little bit of a taxing process. We've tried by all means to accommodate everyone, because indeed everyone, as the TDC said, everyone is the public. We have to ensure that whatever we do addresses the concerns of our people, but also the concerns of business, who are also, by the way, our people as well. So, yeah, with that, thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Did I forget anything?